You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 5 August. We've got Disney results due ahead of U.S. market open. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Simelian Bunjwa from FNB Wealth and Investments. The Nedbank results on the surface may be flat, but if we take out Echo Bank disposal, maybe a lot better. And it's kind of like the cheaper sort of bank down there with ABSA. Maybe looking fairly good. We're going to chat with Davi Schultz from partner at BCG, talking the choice between US and China AI tech. There's stark differences, and it's not all about tech. Geopolitics is a big part of it as well. And then we're going to chat with Duncan Armitage from Anchor, being 25 and making the right investment decisions. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, PIC CEO back at work 3 weeks after being suspended. Court finds the board lacked the authority to remove him without the approval of the finance minister and cabinet. Business day, JC prepares for a pan-African digital marketplace by 2031. Vision for a premier continent-wide financial platform. Morning markets, US was green, very green. S&P 1.8% higher. That takes it above 7,000 points for the first time. NASDAQ up 3.3%. The East is green. Sydney up a third of a percent. Tokyo 3% higher. Hong Kong only just 0.05% up. And Tencent almost 1.5% higher. Commodities, mostly green. Gold futures, 4,188. Brent, 78.28, that's certainly under pressure. Platinum, 1,773, and palladium down a bit, 1,369. The rand is 16.35, Bitcoin, 64,000. And top 40 opening call, green open, 1,000 points, 0.95% higher.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Simelian Mbanjwa from FNB Wealth and Investments. Simelian, appreciate the time. 6 months results for November. For Nedbank to end of June. Earnings per headline earnings up 0.1%. Revenue up 6%. Credit loss ratio also ending a little bit higher. My sense is that if we remove the disposal of that Echo Bank, maybe a lot better. Your thoughts on the numbers? This certainly is one of the cheap banks on our market. Price to book about 1.2.
Morning, Simon. Thank you for having me. Yes, certainly. I mean, the share price yesterday rallied around 6% after the posting of this result. So I think the market is definitely looking past the negative base effects from the Echo Bank disposal. I mean, Echo Bank last year, I think they contributed around 950 million rands for headline earnings. So you take that away this year. It looks very subdued, but was still ahead of what the market expected. But without that, I mean, it would have been strong growth, notably strong growth. I think the financial metrics, some of them, we already mentioned them, improved cost to income ratio. They also saw very strong growth as far as non-interest revenue is concerned. So a lot of activity fee-based income, a lot of activity in the insurance businesses and commission and fees, CIB and all of that, despite the absence of the equity income. Also net interest margin, I mean, not net interest income also was positive, less so than the non-interest income or revenue rather. Supported by high advances, but there was pressure on the net interest margin due to the negative endowment effects. I think that's because interest rates during the period in question were lower than the relative or the comparable one. But I think the underlying story is that of a positive one, and our market reacted in as such.
Is this, I mean, if we look at our banks, there's kind of three tiers, right? There's Capitec. I mean, if we look at simple price to book, Capitec all out on its own. Then there's kind of Standard Bank and First Rand, typically considered to be the better of the bunch. Then ABSA and Nedbank. Is there opportunity down here? I mean, I'm looking at Nedbank. I mean, it's dividend yield nicely over 7, price to book 1.2. Yes. And I can see opportunity. I mean, for example, cost to income at 56, if they can get down a couple of points, is this an opportunity here?
Yeah, I think, you know, from a forward-looking perspective, definitely. I mean, they are, as you mentioned, the one of the cheaper ones, along with APSA. But, I mean, if you're basing it also on, like, on market cap, it's there and thereabout, comparable to Standard Bank and First Rand. And they saw with Capitec, I mean, with APSA, which is a bit smaller from a market cap perspective. So when you're seeing these improving ratios and improving costing to income ratios, they also still very ambitious as far as their return on equity looking forward. I think they're targeting around 18% or more, and they cost income ratio below 50 over the medium term. So these are obviously very margin accretive targets, and you know, it looks like they're edging closer to that. The ROE this time was a bit lower, but well above management cost to, I mean, the group's cost to equity. But still, I think that was also the effect, part of it was affected by the Ecobank disposal. But other than that, I think that, looking forward, there's definitely opportunity considering how cheap they are, and the dividend yield is pretty good. You know, comparatively, should they be able to hit these targets, there's a lot of opportunity. And I think the market realized that yesterday with the share price rally.
The market definitely liked it. Very quick last question. Credit loss ratio up at 95 bips, up from 81. I mean, I suppose this does swings and roundabouts. And to be clear, it was a tough couple of months for consumers with that fuel price increase that came and decimated our wallets back in April. This is just part of the cycle.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's part of the cycle. I think the consumer is still under pressure. You'll tend to see these metrics sort of age up in times like these. But I mean, other than that, I mean, if it still remains relatively within their targets or within their control, I think there's still going to be a little bit of pressure. I mean, if the market can look past that, that means the story, the underlying story. I mean, I think this is the story of the entire filing from yesterday, is that the underlying business, the underlying story is very positive, despite what we're seeing as far as the measures that are reported.
Yeah, I get that. Underlying business. And that's the important point. And that is certainly, I take your point, looking positive from what we see there. We'll leave it there. Simile Mbanjwa, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Davi Schwartz, Managing Director and Partner at Boston Consulting Group, BCG. Davi, appreciate the early morning time. A new report out from the BCG Institute, The Great Divide, how the US and China are splitting the AI world. AI choices are weirdly becoming geopolitical choices, and not just around which models are more powerful or better suited. There is a lot hanging over a decision for either a company or a government, particularly across perhaps the sort of middle road, which is Africa.
Morning, Simon. No, thanks for having me. Great to be on. It's fascinating. We've been looking into this into great depth, and you know, if you allow me to talk through it a little bit,
sure.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, a large entity like a government or a large company nowadays needs to think about the, you know, deploying AI as a firstly, you know, critical enabler for their business, but needs to think about it across a sort of tech stack of really four interrelated things. The first thing is the sort of core compute, the data center capacity, where the compute is coming from. Secondly, the sort of cloud capability of, you know, where the compute is going into the cloud and how the company is accessing it. The models that you then deploy in the cloud, right? So that's where ChatGPT and Claude and all these things live. And finally, the applications that they're building themselves to generate value from these things, right? And what's interesting is that the US seems to be building a fundamentally distinct cloud where if you want to use, for example, Microsoft Azure as your cloud provider, then you're sort of locked into mostly using the US stack. And the same on the Chinese side. It's becoming increasingly interesting choice for governments and for companies to sort of decide which one to lock into and to participate in, because they have fundamentally different economics and, of course, also fundamentally different geopolitical implications, right? Especially in a world with increasing geopolitical tension, this is a super important choice for companies to make these days.
I want to delve into the geopolitical, but before we do, let's quickly touch on that economic, because part of it is, I mean, you know, the Chinese models are mostly open weight, cheaper to run. You kind of don't get, it's like the Chinese cars, I suspect. You get sort of 80% of the ability, but you get it at a fraction of the price. I mean, that Kimi K3, maybe 5% the cost of running a ChatGPT Frontier model. So, I mean, it is a huge price difference as well. This is a massive economic before we get to the other challenges.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Chinese car analogy is actually a very good one, right? It's a bit like buying a car that's about a third of the price, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe a fifth of the price if you look across the whole stack. But, you know, 80 to 90% of the performance, right? So I think the economics are attractive in many instances. But of course, you know, the geopolitics of this has to be considered carefully. The interoperability between different, even within the single stack, different kind of systems needs to be considered. So the economics are a huge part of it, but not the only driving factor, obviously.
The geopolitics is where it gets, I can see a world in which Donald Trump stands up and says, you can't deal with the American government if you use a Chinese open weight model. I mean, the geopolitical is perhaps the markedly harder question, because there is a divide. And to be clear, maybe Xi Jinping does it. Maybe he says, don't bring your ChatGPT or Anthropic here to Beijing.
Yeah, exactly. And the implication is that particularly large multinationals need to think very carefully about interoperability between systems. You know, where does it make sense to actually, you know, take the cost to go interoperable? Where do we fully commit to a particular kind of stack? And indeed, you're right. I think the risk that is emerging is a sort of geopolitical risk where access to you know, your competitive advantage through AI could be cut off in somewhat challenging situations. And, you know, we're seeing very interesting examples, like a very large European manufacturer that has a subsidiary in China locked into the American tech stack, but then at some point had to create essentially a shadow version of this stack for their Chinese business, of course, incorporating a huge number of costs. And I think in the South African environment, there are particularly companies that are in South Africa, but that are part of, you know, larger groups, need to think very carefully about this particular choice in their instance, as it relates to the larger, you know, group of companies that they may be part of. And of course, government also has crucial decisions to make.
I mean, for government, this is even harder decisions. I get your point, absolutely. But a quick last question. That resilience then becomes perhaps more about redundancy, perhaps more about modularity, so that you're not locked into any one, so that you can kind of be flexible depending whether you're talking to Beijing or Washington.
Yes, exactly. Modularity, of course, brings cost, right?
Then
there's also this trade-off between cost and modularity. And I think companies are trying to minimize cost as much as possible and control cost as much as possible. I mean, there's a lot of talk about, you know, token cost and all these things. So cost is absolutely on the agenda, but at the same time, as you say, you know, at the end of the day, you can't be subject to a sort of geopolitical development that breaks down your competitive advantage, right?
We'll leave it there. Davish Kolt, he's a managing director, partner at BCG, Boston Consulting Group. Appreciate the early morning time. Let your money weather the storms for Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting with Duncan Armitage, Wealth Management at Anchor. Duncan, appreciate the time. You wrote a really great point on being 25, a great article. We need to be clear, you are 25. I am not 25. It's been a while since I was there. You make the point, and I know everyone's going to say we sort of belaboring it, but I mean, at that age, what you have is a ton of time, and that is always your most valuable asset we're ever going to have as a human.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I think what's most important is to give it the respect it deserves and also just sort of take a step back. No one is going to send you an invoice for, you know, the years you didn't invest. So like, I believe in a blink of an eye, you could be 45 and think, damn it, I should have started 20 years ago. And so like, I just think being at this stage, you actually got to look forward with this view that like, you have decades ahead of you, and starting now is the best thing you could possibly do for yourself.
And it is those decades, because this is not about how much cash you've got. This isn't even about how much skill or what stocks or funds you pick. This is just about that time. You don't have to be rich. You don't have to be smart. They help, but they're not a requirement.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, just like talking numbers, 1,000 rand a month from 25 to 65 at, call it 12% per annum, that's 480K in and 11, just north of 12 million rand total return, like after 40 years.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, that's all hypothetical, obviously.
Sure.
Punching the numbers just shows you, I mean, 1,000 rand a month, a lot of people are able to invest, but, you know, there's a cost of not starting, because if you did that same exercise at a later time, I mean, you'd have, you know, a fraction of that at the end of the day.
That's actually a great way of looking at it. I mean, you wrote around being 25, that you also make the point now about being 45. And, you know, it's never too late to start, I suppose, but there is always a better time. And sooner is so fundamentally better. I think we underestimate how important that is.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, you know, you don't want to discredit someone that's starting at 45, because at the end of the day, at least you're starting. I mean, the best time to start is right now. But like, you sort of, you lose yourself a bit when you think, oh, I don't have enough to invest. Like 250 rand a month into, you know, a fund that's doing between 10 and 15% per annum. Like, you're still getting some serious returns when you put time on the table, if that makes sense.
It does. And this also, you know, you've got more time, but you don't need to take more risk. The analogy you gave us, you know, 12% return, that's kind of what the top 40's done. I could buy an ETF. I don't need to go and sort of try and find the best AI stocks. I can do this lazy-like.
Yeah, 100%. And I've never, ever mistaked the time that I have ahead of me for skill. Like, I don't think I have some type of special edge. Or, like, you know, I'm 25. I mean, you're speaking about, like, a fund manager that's 6 years old with 40 years experience. Like, I'm not trying to make better decisions than he has, because he's clearly been through, you know, the market cycles that we're sort of talking about today. Like, I don't mistake the luxury of my time for any type of skill. Like, time is the only asset in this equation that really matters, if you think about it.
Yeah, and then it's also the different way to approach markets. I mean, I'm thinking back to when I'm 25. I mean, to be clear, the internet had just arrived, but I think I was on a 9600 modem, and you probably don't know what that means. Trust me, pigeons were faster than internet back in those days. In some ways, it's a different world, but it's the same world. I mean, inflation, that sort of stuff. It is a different world we're in, but it's still, the concept remains.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only thing that's truly different, and I suppose it is actually quite a big difference, is instant access to capital, like, information, right?
You've got
access to markets immediately. Like, I've got a Twitter account. I've got a separate Twitter account that just follows market-related accounts. And, you know, company results, PE ratios, everything is literally accessible in 1 second. And I can act on that information just as fast, where I don't believe it was like that, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. You know, it's a big benefit to my generation, I feel. Like, we're able to act on information a lot quicker. And also, we, you know, we're used to things being up. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, when I started investing at around 18, every single market dip has had a V-shaped recovery. And I've viewed every single dip as a buying opportunity. That's just my lived experience over the last, you know, 5-6 years.
Yeah, I take the point. I mean, it's mine as well. It was just, things were slower. I mean, back in the day, annual reports were literally posted to you. And it was quite thrilling for young me. I mean, I was doing this as a teen to, you know, get the Cecil annual report. But it was not news. It was history. And I mean, it's the speed of information. It can also get daunting, right? It can just simply be too much.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of noise out there, you
know,
and I think being able to filter out the noise is a skill you develop over time. You don't want to chase like a hype, or, you know, a lot of people in my generation, you know, they chase whatever crypto meme coin goes up 1,000% in 5 days. You know, that's never really been my sort of game. But, you know, you see headlines of people earning ridiculous amounts and ridiculous, you know, you got to be able to filter that out a little bit. Not everyone is a reliable source, but, you know, when you're able to pick out some decent info at, you know, good levels, it's amazing. It's like the best tool possible, I believe.
Yeah, and there has been. There's been an absolute democratization of information. It used to be protected by a few. Now we all have it. Literally, we all have it if we have internet. We'll leave it there. Duncan Armitage, Wealth Management Anchor. Appreciate the time. That's our poll today on LinkedIn. If you remember being 25, I do. The question is, did you make good investment choices when you were much younger? I took out an RA at 24 years old. Unfortunately, it was one of those horror RAs where it was all about fees and not about wealth. But have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. That's it for today. We're chatting with Francis Maria yesterday from Old Mutual Wealth, talking around diversification and how it mustn't be just a FOMO trade or chasing returns, and some of the traps to look out for. We asked if your portfolio is well diversified. Half of you said, yeah, doing great. Third said, you think it is. The rest, not really. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Half of online ad spend never reaches a real person.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.